good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. And once again, I am back on the magical isle of Vashon. After a long trip to Amsterdam for tall ships, what they call the sail operation in Amsterdam, and then after my return, my most recent time with the ever-lovely little Vietnamese Vivian, I am back here with you. And I will be here for almost the month of September. And then coming to the end of September, I will be making my way to Key West, Florida. Therein lies, alongside a snug berth, the Coast Guard cutter Ingham, hull number 35, in which I served as XO in Vietnam, and then became her captain on our return from that deployment. So I'm going to be here from the captain's chair in the Vashon captain's chair for the next couple of weeks. And we're going to get caught up on some stories that I have been following, and we're going to get caught up on news from people that send me articles, things that they want me to talk about. My greetings today go out to all members of the Nautical Institute of London. And in particular, am I sending them greetings because this last weekend was an annual general meeting of a branch of the Nautical Institute, of which I have been a member for a number of years. Parenthetical insertion here, I was recruited to become a member by Captain Duke Snyder. And Captain Snyder is among polar people. He is, first of all, a Canadian, and I am related by marriage to half of Canada. He is also a brother icebreaker captain, and he is a former president of the Nautical Institute. And we met, I believe that we met on the quarterdeck of Polar Star or Healy for a change of command ceremony, and he said, Captain Joe, why are you not a member of the Nautical Institute of London? And I confessed that I had no good reason not to be a member, and so I got signed up. It is a wonderful group of people. Most of the members are themselves captains, and the ones who are not captains are involved in some other way in the maritime world. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that and what happened over the weekend. But in the meantime, that's where my greetings are going today, to my Nautical Institute fellow members. And if Captain Duke Snyder is listening, then a thank you to Duke for reminding me that it was my duty to become a member of the Nautical Institute, and it has been a most enriching experience. The binnacle list today for me is personally a very sad one. My niece, Shannon, who is not even, I think she's around 40, is on her last voyage. When I came back from Amsterdam and was clearing some traffic that I had not seen or read while I was deployed, I had a signal from my nephew and my niece that they needed to have some come to the captain time. And I returned the call. And that was where I learned that Shannon is indeed on her last voyage, that she has a very serious cancer, which is inoperable and which is not treatable in any other way. The only treatment is to keep her comfortable until it is time for her to cross her bar. it is really important to me to talk about the binnacle list, and sometimes I do it with a little bit of levity. And sometimes I put on the binnacle list, as I did a couple weeks ago, a motor car or my water system. But in fact, I am not going to do that again, because I am really struck by the coming crossing of the bar of this young lady. So all of this is to say that Captain Joe's people who share with me the binnacle list will be sending energy Shannon's way, and with the hope and the expectation that she will be able to be kept comfortable, because there is no hope. No hope for any kind of miraculous intervention. Everything that can be done has been done. In other news, today, of course, Captain O'Brien is on before I am, and so I took the opportunity to ask him how things were going with his orthopedic situation, and two things have happened in my absence. Maybe that's the key to this that needs for me to go away, for me to deploy, for him to finally connect with somebody who can help him out. And that's exactly what's happened. And part of it is the much-enjoyed physical therapy. And I will be on his stern about doing all of the physical therapy that he is supposed to do. While I was in Amsterdam, my host and hostess were my island friends, Andy and Cece. And Cece had taken a very bad fall. And now the diagnostic x-rays have been taken, and it has been determined that she has no fracture, but she is of a certain age. It's going to take a long, long time for that to heal, and it's going to be uncomfortable for some time. So for all of Captain Joe's people, know that you are in the palm of my hand, and that the energy of all of us together is focused in the direction of each one of you. I sent a signal to all hands not too long, I think maybe it was the last time or the time before that, in which I said that the executive director of the Voice of Vashon, the ever lovely Kate, with whom I share the microphone when we do the classic car parade for Strawberry Festival in July of every year, has decided to move back up north to be with her parents who need her, and for other reasons more than just good and sufficient. And at that time, I did not know how they were going to organize a new executive director. So now I know the answer to that question, and the answer is that my much-loved friend Susan, of the book, which I have talked about here, and it's called Hot Flashes, Cold Showers, has a great artist picture of Susan on the cover. It does not show Susan in the shower. So in any case, Susan was the executive director before, and she has agreed to step in while there is a search going on to find, to recruit, to hire, and to enfranchise a permanent executive director. Whatever Susan does, she has my full support. She and I have completely different backgrounds. We have many differing ideas about life, liberty, and all of those other things thereunto pertaining. But she is a trusted friend. And she's a trusted friend in the sense that she will pick up the hawser of the Voice of Vashon and will not only keep it going, keep it afloat, keep the pumps going, but that she will carry on with some of the improvements and tasks that Kate had going when Kate decided that it was time for her to move on. So I am delighted, although I also am aware of Susan's other dance cards. I know that they are full. Occasionally, she and I are able to carve a little bit of time out of each of our dance cards and have a waltz together. And we sit down and we just talk about friends, family, friends, in my case, shipmates and classmates. In her case, people with whom she's worked, and her family. So, Kate, or you certainly have my loving backing in whatever it is that you decide to do. And Susan, as we work our way through the autumn and the recruiting process, the search process goes on, take my hand, and we will walk together should you ever feel the need for that. I watched the first public pronouncement of the new Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Caudill. Admiral Caudill is a submariner, and I confess some disquietude. I hope that somebody on Admiral Caudill's staff would be listening to this broadcast, because I'm going to render a couple of opinions. And these opinions are based on my considerable experience as a commanding officer, my considerable experience as a cutter captain, my considerable experience as a heavy weather seaman, both freshwater and saltwater. So the first thing that troubles me is this, that in the last, since January, let's not put too fine a point on it, since January, since Inauguration Day in January, there have been a number of reliefs of very senior naval officers. The relief of my commandant happened, of course, on that very first day. But over the last several months, the Chief of Naval Operations has been relieved. The Superintendent of the Naval Academy has been relieved. The Chief of Naval Reserve has been relieved. The head of Special Warfare, in other words, the SEALs, has been relieved. And they're probably, in fact, there are others, but those are the ones that come to mind immediately. So far as I'm aware, none of those were relieved by either the acting Chief of Naval Operations or now the confirmed Chief of Naval Operations. It is within the disciplinary framework of our service, of the military, not just our service, not just my service, both Coast Guard and Navy. Maybe half of my operating time was under naval operational control as well as Coast Guard. But it is part of the framework of our disciplinary system that he who is in charge is the one who says to somebody like the superintendent of the Naval Academy, a 3-star, who happened to be a woman, anything there? I don't know. In any case, it would have been to him to relieve her. But that announcement came from either the Secretary of the Navy or from the Secretary of Defense. If I were the Chief of Naval Operations before I went to my confirmation hearings, I would be talking to my boss And the boss, the immediate boss of the Chief of Naval Operations, is the Secretary of the Navy. And his immediate boss is the Secretary of Defense. And I would have asked for a come to the Admiral session among all three of those gentlemen. And I would have said, here are my stars. They're on the table. If ever again, anyone who is a naval officer is relieved by anyone other than myself or by someone who reports to me and who has my delegated authority to do it, find yourself another Chief of Naval Operations. I don't know whether Admiral Caudill did that. And so I was watching with great interest his first public statement. It obviously had been written by somebody on his staff. I cannot believe that anybody in a leadership position would have written the lengthy, platitude-laden piece that was his first statement to the people that he is privileged to command. One of the things that he went through was that not only was it full of, as if it had been written by someone who holds a executive master's of business administration from the University of Washington. And I hold nothing but respect for anyone who holds that degree. I know at least two who do. And both of them are at the top of their field. But they're not in the military. One of them was, but no longer are they in the military. But this is the way that article, this is the way that statement read. And he is standing with flags behind him, and he is looking all of us right between the running lights. And he goes on to say, among other things, success is measured by five results. Four of those results had to do with shipbuilding. They had to do with, but they did not have to do with people. They did not have to do with sailors. And the word shipmate was never uttered. Now, maybe in the submarine force, they don't say shipmate. Maybe they say boatmate. Well, he didn't say boatmate either. The last of the five results was that sailors, and this is the only mention of sailors in the five results, trained to the highest levels of mastery. And again, it was not addressed to shipmates. It was addressed to some organization called NAVADMIN. So I'm hopeful. I was hopeful. And then the next thing that happened was that he did an all-hands on the flight deck or the hangar deck of the carrier Harry S. Truman. And he's wearing some sort of brown uniform. I don't know what the Navy is using for what used to be dungarees and chambray shirts. I don't know whether this is supposed to convey the idea that everybody in the Navy is multifaceted, multi-trained, and is ready to go out into the desert. When somebody had put him into this uniform, Admiral, you need to look like, this is what you need to look like. And then somebody had put a ball cap on him. And the ball cap was too big, and clearly it was not one that he enjoyed wearing. All of this is to say that I had hoped when the new chief of naval operations stood up before all of us, and I consider myself to be as much a naval officer as I am a Coast Guard officer, that he would look us all right between the running lights and give us a few homely, sailor-like, not necessarily failing the captain's language improvement program, not asking for that. That's what I did sometimes when I would talk to my own crews. And then one of the things that he talked about was on this all-hands meeting on the hangar deck of Harry S. Truman, he said, one of the things that really bothers me a lot is that I have 34 to 37 people directly reporting to me, and I'm saying, oh, golly, poor fellow Admiral. Anybody like that who should easily be able to handle that number of people. And if he can't, then he just goes ahead and does some delegating. Not hard to figure out how to do it. And then he went on to say, and we are going to empower individual sailors. Now, what the hell does that mean? What I wanted to hear, and did not, was that what we're going to do is we're going to observe the principles of being good shipmates. He or she who cares more for his mates and ship than himself. And that we will accomplish the mission and we will take care of those entrusted to us to accomplish that mission. Instead, what we got was empowering individual sailors with no further explanation as to who these individual sailors are or what form this empowering is going to take. And I see I've taken far more time at ventilation on this than I really wanted to do. So I'm going to move on to something that happened over the weekend. Over the weekend was this meeting of the annual general meeting of the West Coast branch of the Nautical Institute of London. The chair is a retired San Francisco Bay bar pilot, a highly skilled and experienced mariner, merchant mariner, captain, and a bar pilot. And the people that were there, among the people that were there, was a person who was not a member of the Nautical Institute, but he was a naval submariner. And it was from him that I got a little bit of a flavor of Admiral Caudle that maybe mitigates what the impressions are that I got from his personal approach to all of us in his first presentation to the fleet. During the weekend, one of the things was that we had a business meeting. And then on Sunday, we all foregathered for the tugboat races in the Port of Olympia. And we did this from the decks of the last remaining vessel of the Mosquito Fleet, the boats that ran all over Puget Sound before the highways were completed. And Virginia 5, or Virginia V, depending on which way you go at it, was and is the last one. She's all wood. She's over 100 years old. She has an absolutely beautiful triple expansion steam engine. And the engine room flat, from the engine room flat all the way up to the next deck, is open. So you can walk along the side and you can peer down and you can see this massive engine turning over, and it is directly coupled to the propeller. There are no reduction gears. It was especially significant to me because one of the people who is a crew member of Virginia 5 or Virginia V is a person who was a junior officer with me 40 years ago When I was chief of operations here in Seattle, Mark was one of my junior officers. He was a Lieutenant JG. He was one of my junior officers on my staff. Later on, he worked his way up through the chairs, and he became captain in Polar Sea. He is himself a captain of both experience and training and a highly successful commander in his own right. But on this particular day, on Sunday, he was acting as an able-bodied seaman. He knew that I was coming. He and I have been in touch off and on over the years. He knew that I was coming, and as I approached the brow, I was piped aboard. To the interest of many people there who were not familiar with our customs. Ding, 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 ding. The bells were sounded. I was given a great, great honor. And then the honor was extended. I was qualified very quickly as an underway helmsman. And so I took the helm watch and steered Virginia V, Virginia 5, safely through the port of Olympia. It does not for someone like me. And then when it was time for all of us to leave, I was piped ashore. Ding, 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 ding. It may seem like not much for people who have not been a part of our seagoing traditions, but for me, it was a glorious time. And so I say right here today, so many thanks to all of the people who keep Virginia V going. She is just out of the shipyard. She is absolutely immaculate, absolutely beautiful. All the woodwork, just the way that it ought to be. The varnish, the trim, everything about her is just perfect. I have a magazine this week. The magazine this week is, of course, my old favorite, and I hope it's yours. The Week. I could do a whole broadcast about this particular issue, but I've got two pieces out of it because I only have a few minutes. I only have 1 minute left. How the hell did that happen? So the first one is an article about orcas, and it talks about orcas who are down off the coast of Western Australia. And I point out that although there is a great deal of concern about the orca pods that live here in the Pacific Northwest that move back and forth between the San Juan Islands and the south end of Puget Sound, the southern end of their range is right off of Point Robinson Light Station. They are, in fact, ubiquitous all over the world, and there are literally probably millions, certainly hundreds of thousands of them, in my part of the Southern Ocean. So this particular article talks about how orcas are trained, and it then talks about how the matriarch of the group is the one who conducts the training program. And this training program is to teach young orcas how to take down other mammals, marine mammals, even unto the largest blue whale. And there's a photograph in this particular issue of The Week that, and the last sentence of this particular article is, since blue whales, the largest animals that have ever lived, are several times bigger than any orca, it can take many hours for them to be exhausted by these battles. The second article is one which really got into my heart. And that, of course, is the one where we look at properties that we're going to buy. And this week, it is homes in university towns. And in Cambridge, There is one. I know exactly that house. I know exactly where it is. It is within our price range, and maybe we'll go ahead and buy it. I'm looking now at my large watch. It is telling me that I am 1 minute over my time. We have come far too quickly to the end of our time together. I guess this was my self-indulgence to talk a little bit about the Chief of Naval Operations and what I had hoped to hear and what I did hear. In any case, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And next week, I'll be talking to you from the captain's chair right here in the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio. I remain, as always, on station and watching properly.